Welcome back. It's Beyond the Box Score. I'm Dan Schneier. That's Jacob Gibbs, and we are joined by reoccurring guest, one of our favorites of the show, and a fan favorite, Ryan Heath, coming in hot today with the slick back hair. You know, people can change, Ryan Heath. People can change. And we talked a little bit about that before the show. So you slick back the hair.
Now Ryan hasn't seen the Tim Robinson stuff. He doesn't know this reference.
Okay. Well, it may be lost on Ryan. Hopefully not lost on
all over my head. Nah, man.
Yeah. A louder Ryan Heath today. And we're talking running backs today. I'm really excited to get into it. But before we do any of that, I did want to give you a little bit of time, Ryan, before the show, to give the listeners a little bit of what you've been doing this offseason. I know you've been grinding away. We've got a lot of good stuff coming, and it's almost July. Like, it's almost the end of July. We're almost at camp. So people need to start getting their fantasy whatever in place to get going for this season. And I didn't know where I was going there. So, Ryan, why don't you take over?
Yeah, thanks. I've been very busy this offseason. I had a huge article out about wide receiver personnel that people can go check out. And lately I've been diving into basically the positional correlations of every stat to fantasy points at each position. So just figuring out what stats actually matter, what we can use to kind of help us project forward the most important things to look at for each position. We did quarterbacks last week. We're going to do running backs this week. Very excited to get into it and just kind of talk about from a base level, like what matters in fantasy football, what should we pay attention to? I think it's like for myself personally, it's like really important work to kind of review and do every single year to like get my brain into thinking shape in terms of like what my final ultimate like redraft takes are going to be and which players I'm going to really go in on. So yeah, it's one of my favorite times of year to just kind of dig in and get nerdy.
And we're going over today XFP, which is hopefully a more predictive way of running back scoring than even quarterback stats that we've done last week from the show. So I want to get into a little bit of that. Before we do that, Jacob, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm great. Yeah. Good to be home. I've been on the road in the air for like six straight weeks. just settled back in. Really been looking forward to this show. Like Ryan said, we've been working on like what matters for fantasy purposes. So we've got, you know, all the nerdy stats here that we'll show you that are on the screen on YouTube. We did the quarterback show last week. We're doing running backs this week, and then we'll hit on wide receiver and tight end in the upcoming weeks as well. So excited to dig into this for sure, because I know Dan and I have been like grinding film a lot, but I really want to spend time with the data as well, because we talk about a lot of this stuff. It's easy to get kind of lost in the sauce on this stuff. The running back takeaways were interesting to me today. Particularly I want to pick Ryan's brain on like receiving versus rushing, because I know like a really common metric that we cite a lot from good old Scott Barrett, the GOAT, over at Fantasy Points Data is, you know, receptions, targets worth way, way more fantasy points than rush attempts in terms of like how many fantasy points they actually produce for any format, even non-PPR. Receptions and targets have been worth more than rush attempts. But looking at Ryan's research in terms of what's been predictive of next season scoring, I was surprised to see rushing so high, so many rushing metrics up here at the top. My guess would have been that receiving is higher. So there's probably a number of things playing into that. Maybe that's predictability in terms of rushing being a little bit more stable rushing roles than receiving year over year. But yeah, excited to have Ryan here, excited to dig into all this.
Awesome. Let's start off then by just diving into explaining a little bit for those who don't know what XFP is, Ryan, and getting a little bit into that.
Yeah, so XFP stands for expected fantasy points. Effectively what it is we recognize that every touch is likely to be worth a different amount of fantasy points. And we see this when you look back historically, and then we can kind of build out a process in a model to say every single touch based on where it takes place on the field, whether it's at the 5 yard line or the 50 yard line, and also whether it's a target or a rush attempt, because yeah, as you guys mentioned, targets per target are much more valuable than rush attempts, especially in PPR scoring, but even in standard scoring. I I think it's a target is worth like 2.75 times that of a carry in terms of the average fantasy points it turns into in PPR, somewhere around 1.75, two times in standard. So it builds that in. It builds in where on the field it is. Of course, red zone, like goal line touches are going to more often lead to more fantasy points. And yeah, it kind of just gives us on average, an average player of average skill in an average offensive environment would score this amount of fantasy points on their touches. So what we have here is expected fantasy points per game. So just like fantasy points per game, you just divide the total XFP on all their plays by the number of games they've played. That gives us a baseline. And then something cool we can do is we can just compare that to fantasy points per game. So you can see here that both are roughly as predictive, but we will see, especially in like an individual season or maybe over the first 4 weeks of a season or what have you, a large variation between a player's actual fantasy points per game and their expected fantasy points per game. I'll talk about this a little bit later when we get into efficiency stuff. It makes you think, okay, it's going to regress, and sometimes it does, but also sometimes players are above average or they're on above average offensive environments, right? And that's also useful contextual information to keep in mind that we want to layer in terms of other data that we're seeing or our film takes. Like yeah, Derrick Henry just is that dude. He should always outperform his expected fantasy points. That's just what the guy's done every single year, right? So that's XFP. It's anytime I say XFP, expected fantasy points per game, it's basically just volume accounting for all the nuances of different volume being worth different amounts of fantasy points on average.
Awesome. Yeah, go ahead, Jacob.
That's good stuff. I've got a bunch of, like, we're going to get into individual player takeaways here. So like you can check out XFP is on the fantasy points status suite. I've got it here on the screen for YouTube watchers. It's data.fantasypoints.com. And specifically, if you go look at the bell cow report from this rushing tab, that's where I typically find XFP. And you can look at, we're going to get into some cool filters. Like you can go and look specifically at, you know, yards to goal, plays that came from inside the 20 or inside the 10, and look at the percentage of team XFP and all that stuff. So definitely spend some time with this if you're a Fantasy Points data member. And if you aren't, then I definitely recommend that you spend some time with this, because we're going to get into individual profiles today, but we can't possibly cover everything. So if you have any questions about any individual players, I really just can't recommend enough checking out this resource. It's so cool to have it all in this place right here where you can look at, you know, the red zone splits and all of this. You can sort it by specific, you know, weeks of the season and everything to see, like, maybe a player was getting more involved later in the year, for example, or whatever the case might be, and look at all these backfields if you want to look specifically at, like, the Detroit backfield. You can do that and see the Jaguars backfield or whatever, see what percentage of this was going to Travis Etienne versus Tutin and so on. So I did dig up some of that today. And there's, I'm really intrigued, like, what Ryan's takeaways will be having looked at the running back position. And then of course, when I get Dan's 30,000 foot view on all this as well, because XFP is something that we mention a little bit here, but this is a Fantasy Points data proprietary metric that they've made, and this is the only place to find it, really. So excited to have Ryan on with us. The chat's asking for Theo Grimminger. Definitely want to get the GOAT, the OG, in here as well. I mentioned Scott Barrett. He's coming on, Dan, for at the end of July. It's me and Scott share a birthday. I don't know if you remember that or not, but me and Scott very literally have the same birthday. And Scott's somebody who Dan knows personally and has worked with as well. Like, always happy to have him on the program. So shout out to all the Fantasy Points data crew. Excited to have everybody here helping out.
Way back to the PFF days. You should look us up. We used to do good things over there, and now we've all blossomed into doing our own things. But yeah, Ryan, I really want to get a little bit more into kind of the receiving versus rushing side. Jacob and I have talked about this so much on, like, the last few months worth of episodes. Like, where is receiving going for these running backs? Because we've seen teams move to more 12 personnel, more 13 personnel, and we've seen the targets go way down. Like, we were looking at it last year. It's just year after year, it's seemingly moving in a certain direction. I wanted to know what you see from the kind of the difference between the rushing and the receiving for the running backs, and where you see it moving moving forward? Like, are there going to be just a few guys every year that we need to get because they have such an advantage based on what they do in the passing game?
Yeah, so I have a lot to say here, so bear with me, guys. But my 10,000 foot view is, compared to 5 years ago, receiving for running backs, there's just less of it happening, right? Yep. We've seen target share to running backs decline pretty much over the last five-ish years. It used to be that the very much like the league meta was, we're just going to have a, even if it's not like a bell cow running back that gets every rush and every target, a lot of teams would have these satellite backs, receiving only backs, that they would spam a ton of just PPR scam receptions to. These are your James Whites, your Shane Vereens. I think the Patriots and Sean Payton are basically responsible for making this a fad in the league for a while. But it was lots of guys, right? There, like J.D. McKissic was a fantasy RB2 for one season because of this phenomenon, right? And that has gone down a lot. I think teams have come to realize that generally, if you are going to be throwing the ball, it's better to throw the ball to a receiver. That generally leads to better EPA per play and per route and all that. I think the league has moved away from, we're just going to spam a bunch of targets to running backs if that's not like our only option, right? So I do think that has kind of changed the fantasy landscape a little bit. One obvious way is zero RB is a lot harder to do now, just because there are none of those like PPR scam floor low end RB2s anymore, where there used to be like several every season that you could just draft in round 10 and like kind of plug in as a floor option while your zero RB team was cooking, right? So that's like not a thing anymore. And now what we see is, even at the top of the like running back kind of hierarchy, so within like the first 50 picks by ADP or the first 100 picks by ADP, the elite pass catchers that do it all are total bell cows, get over 40% of their XFP, of their volume, from receiving. These are still good picks. They still do exceed ADP expectation at relatively higher rates than guys who are not elite receivers. It is still very important. But what we've also seen is that guys on the far other end of the spectrum, the rushing only backs that are below 30% of their XFP from receiving. So these are your Nick Chubbs, your Derrick Henrys, your Saquon Barkley in a couple seasons of his career has fallen into this. That kind of archetype, James Cook. These guys also are exceeding their ADPs now. I think part of it is because the fantasy football market has just so much gone that way in terms of punishing guys that don't catch passes and rewarding guys who do. I think also some of it is risk-based, right? While you get a lot of upside from the non-pass catchers if they're on an amazing offense where they're the total engine of it, and they are scoring 16 touchdowns in a season, and it's one of the top scoring offenses in the league. So think of Saquon Barkley in 2024, Derrick Henry that year, Jonathan Taylor last year before Daniel Jones got injured. You can get that like upper high end outcome out of these rushing only backs, but there's risk too, right? We've seen this every year of Jonathan Taylor's career where the Colts haven't been winning games and moving the ball. We saw this with Derrick Henry on the Titans in a lot of his seasons, right? There's downside risk if the offense around that rushing only back is not amazing and is not facilitating that efficiency on the ground and all of those rushing touchdowns, right? Whereas you don't have that with the elite pass catchers. If the Dolphins are a total dumpster fire, Devon Achane is fine. He's going to catch 60 balls, right? Same with Christian McCaffrey. If the Panthers are a total dumpster fire, it won't matter. He'll catch a ton of PPR points. So you get kind of both upside and safety from the pass catchers. From the non-pass catchers, I think you still do get upside. There's just way less safety in it. And you have to be really careful about the team and the offensive environment that you're betting on. And then I think the guys in the middle that are kind of 2.5 down running backs, like, that do catch passes but maybe aren't elite at it. So like Javonte Williams or Travis Etienne. I need to figure that pronunciation out and get in the habit of that one. But like those guys where, yeah, they're getting most of the carries, they're catching a few balls a game, but they're not like these elite receivers. They don't have like the total every down role in the sense that like a McCaffrey or an Etienne does. These guys are almost getting the worst of both worlds in that you are paying for these guys because the market is like, okay, they project for some PPR points and there's some safety there in that even if their teams aren't great, they'll still have some production. They're not only relying on rushing and positive game scripts, but they haven't had, at least at ADP over the last 5 years when I did this study, they haven't had like those huge upside outcomes. So you're kind of overpaying for the safety with a lot of those guys that are kind of in the middle archetype wise. So one of my big things for this year is I want to lean into either side of the spectrum. I want to lean into either the really amazing elite pass catchers or the guys who aren't elite pass catchers, but hopefully you're getting a discount in ADP because of that. And you can make a targeted bet on that offense to carry them to an amazing like two down roll outcome. Just in terms of what we've seen from Derrick Henry when he's gotten cheap, Jonathan Taylor when he was end of round two last year. That's right. Like kind of what you're looking to catch.
Even James Cook last year is another example of that. Yep. On a good offensive environment. It's interesting as you break it down like that, Ryan, almost into three groups. I almost feel like it's like a modern age RB dead zone that you're trying to avoid this year based on your research here. It's not the traditional RB dead zone that we had in the past, where I think it's kind of been lost. Like the last couple of years, there really hasn't been an RB dead zone. There's been hits in that range. And the old prototype that you wanted to avoid that you went over now has some hits if it's in the right offensive environment. But now there's a new kind of version of what you want to avoid. And it makes sense based on how you broke that down. And obviously the data and the research backs it up. I would like to maybe, if we can, unpack some of the players this year so far that we're seeing it, that you would feel, or maybe even just one or two examples of players that are fitting into that range or in early drafts.
Yeah, I can give you some right now, or do you want to? How do you want to do this?
Yeah. Players, how about that? We'll take our first break. Now that we're back, before we get into that, Ryan, I do want to take this time to shout out Wisco Disco, who is always in our chat, always hyping us up. And then it's always good for me because whenever he does get his comment featured on our show, Emma has to put up the big Wisconsin Badgers helmet up there. And just a reminder of which Big Ten team is really better than the one that she cheers for, which she knows deep down, but it's just a good reminder in the chat. So let's get into some of those players, Ryan.
All right. Yeah. So from the two down perspective, like the guys that have been rushing only at least to this point in their careers, there's kind of two names that really jump out to me. One is Derrick Henry. And the reason for that is I think there's just been like a weird reversal between Derrick Henry and guys like Jonathan Taylor and James Cook, where these are very similar roles. These are two down roles. They might catch like a few passes, but really what you're betting on is amazing efficiency on the ground and really strong touchdown equity on a good offense, right? But in PPR leagues, if you look at like FFPC right now, Derrick Henry goes at the end of round two. On the half PPR sites, he's more like a middle of round two type of pick. And Jonathan Taylor, James Cook, these are like solidly round one guys. So you're getting a one round discount on a Derrick Henry who every year, or at least the past 5 years of his career, I imagine every year of his career, he has outperformed his expected fantasy points. He has like outperformed his actual volume just because of how strong of a runner he is and how much of a freak he is. And what you're getting with the Ravens is the highest implied win total from Vegas out of any of those three teams I just mentioned. The Colts have, I think it's a 7.5 win total. The Bills are 10.5. The Ravens are 11.5. So Vegas is telling you that Derrick Henry is probably going to have the best game script out of any of those three kind of elite rushing only backs that I just mentioned. So I want to lean into that. I've been like anti Derrick Henry for a lot of my fantasy football content career. And he's proven me wrong about him being too old or I was going to fall off every single season, whatever. I'm not predicting an age cliff for an individual talent like a Derrick Henry anymore. I think it's like a perfect environment here where there's a little bit of trepidation on the Ravens, I guess, or uncertainty around how will Lamar recover from this injury? What will the offense look like with Declan Doyle? But to me, it's like these are like really elite, talented players that I want to bet on and that I think will probably just kind of work out in any offense. Henry, if you look at him last season, he had if you just look between games with Lamar Jackson and without Lamar Jackson, with Lamar, he had the second highest explosive run rate in the NFL, behind only Devon Achane. In his games without Lamar, it was like 33rd of 35. So, of course, like the fusion of these two guys being on the field together, it is massively important to that kind of efficiency, big plays, upside outcome. But I see it in round two. Why not is kind of where I'm at. So it's very much like an evolution for me that I'm getting a discount, I'm willing to take the plunge on that two down guy. The other one I would bring up is Bashaul Tuten. I think he can be a bit more of a pass catcher. Certainly on like design targets and everything. I think he's a logical like screen candidate just because of how fast he is. But yeah, we saw him mostly in a two down role last year, not a huge pass catching role. So he would like fit into, I think with how the market's treating him as like a rushing only back, whether that ends up being true or not, I almost don't care. The Jaguars are going to be one of the most explosive offenses in the league. Right. Over the past 5 years, if you look at every play caller's by EPA per play, like adjusted net yards per attempt, all these efficiency stats, Liam Cohen is like top three among everybody, which is absurd. It's like him and then like every coordinator that has played with like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, right? Like it's like super noticeable. So I like easy to bet, want to bet on the Jaguars offense. While like LaQuinn Allen may have a receiving role, even if he does, it may not matter at this cost. Allen also literally ran fewer routes than Bashaul Tuten did last year because he is so much in that like third down pass pro type of role, which
LaQuinn Allen is an offensive lineman.
Yeah, people conflate that with like a pass catching running back all the time, but that's not really the case. There is not like very many fantasy points that are scored by running backs on third down. Like a lot right. of the even the receiving backs, they're catching balls on first and second down a lot of the time.
It's so overrated, third down back thing. I'm so with you on that point. Yep.
So yeah, that's kind of where I can see things converging for Tuten. Chris Rodriguez hasn't been on the field or has been on and off. That's been kind of a thing. Like I just kind of believe in Tuten to lock up and win this job in training camp. But even if he doesn't, it's cheap enough that it's like an ambiguous backfield bet I'll make. So those are the two guys that come to mind in terms of haven't really shown the receiving role, but that I think are really strong, like just upside bets in general this year. On the other side of it, it's the usual suspects. I'm still drafting Christian McCaffrey this year. I'm sorry. Like I will do it until he stops being a player. I'll keep drafting him in round one. Yep. Chase Brown, I think, is a good call out in terms of a guy that's had a pretty strong receiving role, especially in games with Joe Burrow. You can do like a bunch of splits with him with and without Samaje Perine, with and without Burrow. Overall, the takeaway is just like, even if the role isn't like as perfect, like if Perine's taking routes or whatever, just the red zone role, the receiving role is so strong with Brown that I just want that piece of that offense there. I think like the receiving guy that I'm struggling with that I'm interested to hear you guys talk about is Devon Achane. Yeah. Just because, well, like, yes, he should be somewhat insulated from the Dolphins being the worst team in the NFL this year, which I think is just clearly what's going to happen. What about the Browns? honest, they're in a two-way race to the bottom there. I shouldn't have spoken too soon, maybe, but that like, yeah, theoretically he's insulated there. But also, like, I don't know. We haven't seen Malik Willis like hyper target run a running back really right. It like it's different that he's really the only like good option in the passing game, so maybe we do bring back like the 2016 throwback era of our running backs is just going to be like the team's leading receiver. Maybe that's literally what Miami does this year, but I just see too many ways where it kind of goes wrong. Like they're not using him fully in the passing game. Mike McDaniel would move Achane around the formation a lot. I had a stat where he averaged like 2 or 3 fantasy points per game lined up not in the backfield, which it has not been something that Bobby Slowik has ever done in his play calling history in terms of like splitting guys out wide or in the slot or what have you. So I'm like concerned that there won't be as much creative usage for Achane, but I don't know. We're pretty far afield of archetypes in rushing and receiving now. So I'll throw it back to you guys because I've rambled for way too long.
That's good stuff. I want to get your thoughts. I'm going to throw this up on the screen, a chart from Ryan. I want to get your thoughts on Quinshon Judkins because he's somebody who Dan and I have a lot of trouble with. And so I want to get another perspective on him. What I've got here from Ryan is some play callers research that he's done, and it's historical yards per carry versus rush attempts per game on design runs only for these play callers from 2021 to 2025. So you see on the left is yards per carry and then rush attempts per game is over here. So the Todd Monken here, the Ben Johnson, these are play callers who averaged high yards per carry and had a lot of rush attempts per game. And then like Drew Petzing over here, Mike McDaniel is like high efficiency, but not as many rush attempts per game. And look at where Monken's at. Obviously, Derrick Henry influences this. But I still think it's interesting to think about this Cleveland team that could be, I think, better up front and better at running the ball this year. I've just had the hardest time with Judkins because I don't think he projects for a passing down role at all. But then, like I said, I've been digging into the film lately for these running backs, and he might have the most impressive film of any of the 2025
Love that you
rookie
said
class.
That.
So any thoughts you have on Judkins, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. Graham Barfield has said similar things about Judkins. He seemed very, I haven't talked to him about Judkins in a while, but he's very impressed with Judkins generally as a rookie. It doesn't show up as much in the data, but yeah, that is so much because of the offensive environment, right? But that's like kind of where I just have a lot of pause with Judkins. The Browns might be the worst or the second worst team in the NFL. Like game script is just so, so important for this archetype that it doesn't like, I just don't see the world where Judkins matters in fantasy football, where the Browns do not like miraculously find a quarterback and they're just super overperforming offensively. Judkins isn't someone I'm drafting. I don't think he's like a horrendous pick where he goes or anything like that. I think you have to have some upside outcome or belief in the Browns. The other thing with Judkins for me is I'd say I'm like 20% scared off by the fibula injury for running backs now that he and Cam Scataboo both had. We saw it with Tony Pollard, where he returned to play very easily like the next season in training camp, just like Judkins has, just like Scataboo has. Like these guys, we're hearing positive news, like these guys are on the field and they look good and what have you. But Pollard's efficiency was shot until like December for the entire season after he injured his fibula. We saw Mark Andrews, Chris Godwin have like really drastic efficiency declines after similar injuries. I don't want to like conflate all of these. Like some of these guys had tightrope surgery. Some of them also dislocated their ankle. Like there's like different variables to each one. Of course, Judkins and Scataboo are much younger than most of the previous examples that I'm citing in terms of them returning quickly, but being diminished efficiency wise. But that's like another kind of like lingering doubt that I have on Judkins and why I'm kind of not getting in on him this year.
He'll be an interesting one. Jacob and I have discussed him a lot. I feel like the reason I liked him is because of what Jacob said and what he came to after watching these backs and what obviously you said, Graham, and yourself as well. It's like the tape was so much better than people realize, but it's just such a bad offensive environment. It's so tough to buy in for me. But I want to talk about some of the middle ground type running backs. You mentioned them earlier, Achane, Travis Achane we're talking about, and Javonte Williams, those types of backs. They're at a unique spot in my mind from an ADP standpoint, given recent draft history in my memory of playing fantasy football through the last 5 years, it's like in that range. I don't typically expect to get backs like that, but is there potential for those types of backs in that middle round to kind of fall into what you were discussing before, that like dead zone bucket? Or do you think some of these guys can kind of overcome that, like those two, for example?
Yeah, I do. As you mentioned earlier, I kind of think that the middle ground archetype of running back kind of is the RB dead zone this year, or that's like the way I'm thinking about it, at least.
Okay.
And that was kind of always the case with the dead zone. Like we used to say, oh, don't draft in the dead zone, but also like the young guys and the receivers can outperform it. So it's like, well, maybe that's not an ADP dead zone then. Maybe it's just an archetype thing. So yeah, looking at some of these guys specifically, Javonte Williams and Travis Achane are the two biggest examples to me. With Travis Achane, he's like that perfect 2.5 down back. He's not like such an amazingly elite or explosive player or receiver that a play caller is going to say, wow, like I have to draw up plays for Travis Achane over Chris Olave targets or over Jordan Tyson targets or what have you, right? So this type of back is going to be much more environment dependent in terms of what their receiving role is. To me, any guy that's like in the middle, and that's we see like not great indicators with Kellen Moore in terms of running back receiving that I think are kind of being overlooked right now, just because people see, oh, Travis Achane, he's like a bell cow workhorse type of back. Austin Eckler, when he had Kellen Moore as a play caller, fell from a 17% target share the year before to 13.7% with Kellen Moore. Saquon Barkley the next year fell from 13.8% to 9.6% in his target share. And then Alvin Kamara, of course, partially it was because he was washed, but I would argue he's been washed for a few years. He was up at almost a 20% target share under Clint Kubiak in 2024, fell all the way to 10% with Kellen Moore last year. So Moore just does not really use the running backs in terms of I want to throw to them a ton. If you break it down by like design targets as well, Moore has always done his screen targets and like his easy button touches to a receiver. It has been Keenan Allen, it's been CeeDee Lamb at different points. It was Devontae Smith somewhat in Philadelphia, and it was a lot of Chris Olave last year. So I think Moore just ideologically just kind of runs his offense more through the receivers. So I worry about a Travis Achane on a Saints team where it's like, I'm cautiously optimistic on Tyler Shuck. And I think that Moore will run a ton of plays and will try to stay competitive, but it could easily be a lot of negative game script again. Is that just going to be Achane running like a bunch of kind of empty ish routes and not really getting that much target volume? Like I think he's a player where you want like a really strong offensive environment, kind of like you had with the Jaguars last year, to see like full success. And now I think you're like paying for perceived safety that I'm not sure is there. Javonte Williams is kind of similar to me. So his receiving role, I think it's both overrated and underrated. I think people get very extreme on both sides of this discussion, weirdly. What I will say is 38% of his targets on the season last year came in the four games that CeeDee Lamb missed significant time or was out from weeks 3 through 6. He was up at a 12.2% target share without CeeDee Lamb. That was the RB8. In all his games with CeeDee Lamb, he was at a 6.4% target share. That's down at the RB45 behind our friend Quinshon Judkins, behind even Ken Walker last year. And he didn't have a single game above a 10% target share after Lamb returned in week 7. I think where people take this too extremely is, like, yes, his role was worse as the season went on. He was also injured. He was on the injury report with a neck injury for a couple of games. Like they were load managing him at a couple different points. Like they do weird stuff in a couple games. I remember where they would like put him on the field for third down, but he like wouldn't ever run a route. Like he would just pass block or like some like just kind of like really weird specific things that they would change every single week to like make him just have fewer overall snaps and routes. It seemed like, even if like the actual targets and volume were kind of stable when it came out of the role. So yeah, I just, with Williams, I don't see the upside. Like, you need injuries to the Cowboys pass catchers, I think, for him to really get like meaningfully up into that like mid range or higher RB1 fantasy range. I just don't like to pay the round three pick for the safety. I think he's a better pick than Travis Etienne just because of offensive environment. But I have him like in this kind of middle archetype where you're overpaying for the safety a little bit.
It's interesting because as we get to that range of the draft, there's just so few receivers I want to bet on. That's why I have trouble kind of parsing through avoiding some of these players, which I agree with you. You made the case. I mean, I think the case is very strong, especially for HN. For me, like I totally see where you're coming from. When I watch back a lot of the Liam Cohen, Jacob and I have done so much Liam Cohen research. When I watch back a lot of the tape, there's just a great design and involvement for the running backs in the passing, specifically in the red zone. I think Achane, I keep wanting to call him ETN. I think Achane,
I know,
like, it's crazy. I think Achane did cash in a lot in the red zone, specifically as on these design targets of the receiver that I just don't think are going to be there. Like you said, like the way that's, it's kind of just how that system is predicated, the way that Kellen Moore designs it. It's like the way the Shuck is going to go through his progression, it's not going to really come back to the running back. It's, the ball is out way before that to these receivers. So very interesting stuff there on the running backs. We'll take one more break and get into some touchdown data when we get back. All right, Jacob's back now. What's up, buddy?
What's up? I love this discussion because we get to, this is like some of Dan's favorite ways to approach fantasy, and we're kind of like quantifying it, but it's like upside, right? Like, and that's something that we talk about with Ryan a lot, is like trying to find these league winners. And so it's not to say necessarily that Javonte Williams will be a bad pick, because like Ryan said, the offensive environment there in Dallas could be awesome. And it's possible that it would be even better for him than it was last year. If their defense, which they poured all of their resources into this offseason, if their defense is better and they get more positive game scripts, I've been digging into lately percentage of plays where teams were playing with a lead or playing from behind last year, because you can find some outliers there. And the Cowboys were one of those teams. I think they're bottom 4 or 5, I think. That might not be right, but in terms of percentage of the plays where they're playing from behind last year, which is pretty strange because they were actually a very good offense. And so it mostly comes down to the defense, and it could be a lot better this year. And if that changes, maybe we don't see quite as many games where they just have to lean heavily into the passing game, the dropback game. And when they were doing that, Javonte Williams, one of the best pass blockers in the NFL, the running back position, is spending a lot of time doing things that don't score any fantasy points.
Right.
And so if he gets better game scripts, maybe he scores more points, etc. This isn't a definitive way to say these are the good picks, these are the bad picks necessarily. It's more like, how do we get to that elite, you know, league winning type of upside that we're always looking for? This is Ryan's perception is that, like, you don't want that middle ground of guys who don't give you elite rushing upside or elite receiving upside, because how then do they get there? Otherwise, probably just an outlier type of touchdown season, which is really hard to predict. If you look at his research on like what's been predictive of fantasy scoring, one thing I notice is that touchdowns are pretty freaking low. So I'm just going to scroll down here. You've got all these market share numbers, expected fantasy points numbers. Still not seeing touchdowns anywhere. Here it is, finally rushing touchdowns. So it's like the 20th
wow.
most predictive stat. Receiving touchdowns are less predictive of future fantasy points. You can see like some red zone stats down here, but again, pretty low relative to the overall market share and fantasy point numbers. So that's worth knowing, I think, is like so we get fixated on which running backs and good offenses will score touchdowns and being able to predict that and everything. But I just don't know how predictive it actually is. I think we've done, and I think Ryan has done some of this research. I know it's been done. Is like, we've done a lot of research on if we can predict based off of various things in terms of like Vegas win totals and stuff like that, if we can predict fantasy scoring. And Ryan, have you found much predictiveness there?
I applied the preseason Vegas win totals specifically to this research on like the rushing only backs, because I was really curious, like, oh, can we just take the guys with the highest Vegas totals? Are they going to outperform their ADP the most, or go over the top on touchdowns? And there was not really a correlation there. Like you wanted guys that ended up winning a lot of games, but the preseason win totals weren't really giving you an edge on ADP is what I found. So I think it's all kind of priced in with touchdowns specifically and red zone roles. They do matter. The guys need them in order to hit those upside outcomes. But yeah, from year to year, it's just not very stable. A guy can have a really good red zone role and score 6 touchdowns, or he could score 15. Like there's just so much variance inherent in that, yeah, from year to year, the red zone and the touchdown stuff isn't going to look that predictive. But it's more of like a necessary but not sufficient type of thing to me, where, yeah, I want to know that they have a red zone role and that they could hit that upside scoring outcome. But it's not just because they have it doesn't mean they will, is how I'd put it, I guess.
Yeah, what I've got up on the screen here, this is Fantasy Points Data Suite. I'm looking only at red zone plays. And so I've got it sorted by expected fantasy points. When in the red zone, only 3 running backs were over 100 expected fantasy points in the red zone last year. It's Christian McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor, and Javonte Williams. So like really the role was already really, really good. Running back 3 in XFP in the red zone. And I think he was like 6. Yeah, running back 6 in total actual fantasy points scored in the red zone. So you already kind of had the outlier year. And to be fair, it was like, what he produced last year would be a good return at where he's being drafted now, which again is to say that like it's not that he's a bad pick, but it's like can he really give you the type of season that somebody like Derrick Henry could if Derrick Henry has like freaking 18 rushing touchdowns plus all the rushing yards or whatever, you know? I don't know. I don't know if that is really
in fact, sort by that again and show me Henry's red zone XFP versus. So he was fourth last year in red zone XFP, actually got unlucky in terms of actual, just 79.1 actual fantasy points in the red zone. That's very odd for Derrick Henry's career. The previous season he had, I believe the highest rushing touchdown conversion rate inside the 5 or inside the 10 was near the bottom of the league this past year. That's just like a variance thing. And I think that's also speaks to like we're getting a once in a lifetime discount on Derrick Henry on a good Ravens offense this year. So that's like another point. That's another thing I'm going to have to pull for my draft guide probably to justify my Derrick Henry interest.
A few other like red zone related, touchdown related players that I wanted to point out. Ashton Jeanty was running back 6 in the percentage of his team's expected fantasy points when in the red zone. He was running back 21 in actual fantasy points per game in the red zone, which is not a surprise. The Raiders sucked. But I do think it is just like pretty clear the bell cow potential for him to be like the guy. And if you look at, I mean, I'm not expecting the Raiders offense to be able to copy paste what Seattle's, you know, Super Bowl winning offense did last year. But Kubiak did produce a ton of freaking running back points in the red zone. Zach Charbonnet was 9th in expected fantasy points at the running back position on the year in the red zone, and he missed the game. And he was also 9th in fantasy points in the red zone at the running back position. And that's, you know, Kenneth Walker, obviously it was frustrating for him. He didn't have nearly as much production, but he still did have almost 40 fantasy points in the red zone. So you combine the two of them, it was very productive. And I just want to bring that up for Jeanty because I think he could score way more there. Like when they get in scoring distance, it's going to probably just be him and Bowers. Travion Henderson, I wanted to hit on a few teammates here that I thought it was interesting how low the Patriots were, considering what an awesome offensive season it was for them overall. But it was running back 22 in expected fantasy points in the red zone for Travion Henderson, running back 30 for Ramondre, which surprised me. He missed some time too. But they just didn't use their running backs much in scoring distance. They've got obviously Drake May when in scoring distance, and now they've got AJ Brown brought in as well. If y'all have any thoughts on any of these, you can stop me, but I'm just going to kind of keep running along the players. If not, DeAndre Swift and Kyle Manongai were both outside of the top 20 in XFP in the red zone. And I think that the Bears could score a lot more running back points in the red zone if they're playing with a lead more and more. We'll see what happens there. And then again, if either one of them are to get hurt, then the other, I think, is going to have a massive role. I would be really curious. We haven't talked about them at all. I'd be curious to hear Ryan's thought on the Bears backfield, because I've got a few metrics where I think they pop up as really strong. And obviously the play calling research that Ryan has done, just everything points towards Ben Johnson being the man for fantasy and real life purposes. The last
back. Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, Ben Johnson's in the top right of every single chart. And I am like, I haven't been drafting a ton of Swift, but I am like Swift curious just because of that. And I think the, if there's more positive game script, that's kind of, as excited as we are about the Bears pass catchers, Burden, Loveland, Odunze, and that's like the big debate this offseason. There is a world where the answer is kind of like none of them do anything amazing just because the offense is so good and they lean so much into the run. I hope not. I don't like expect that, but that is like an outcome that I think people aren't considering as much.
The last team that I would mention is the Jaguars. So I think that Ben Johnson and the Bears actually ran the ball way better than the Jaguars. And still, if you look at like red zone expected fantasy points, the Jaguars look as good, if not better. Because Liam Cohen, we've seen now several stops, like really, really feature that position in the red zone. So we've got, and this is with, you know, Trevor Lawrence getting a ton of rushing work in the red zone as well and expected fantasy points in the red zone. But they just scheme up stuff, whether it's screens, reverses, whatever, to the running back position. Travis Etienne was running back 8 in expected fantasy points in the red zone. And that's crazy to me when it was really kind of a three-way backfield. And Bashaul Tuten was running back 43 ahead of like Breece Hall in expected fantasy points in the red zone.
That's such a brutal stat. Oh my God.
Yeah. That's obviously a Breece stat. Breece is really, really good, man. I've been digging into like explosive plays and posting some cut-ups of those. And it's just like, man, he's so good. He's so underrated. People really don't realize how good this guy is. He's just been so screwed by the Jets. But for fantasy, it feels awful. It feels, it does. Like it's one of the hardest situations where you have to like not conflate like the real talent and like what the actual fantasy outline is here. Because he fits pretty firmly into Ryan's description, I think, of like middle ground guys.
Yeah.
On one of the worst offenses that we have the least confidence in the play callers. And for what it's worth, they're talking about splitting the backfield and everything. Running back like 47 or something and expected fantasy points in the red zone last year. Just awful. And that was with the big dude going
Allen
down.
Getting hurt, yeah,
Braylon Allen going down. Like, who could be somebody who takes that red zone work?
Right.
Yeah. Pretty rough. I wanted to throw this up on the screen again from Ryan. It's just like, look at our guy, Ben Johnson, man.
Shield your eyes, Giants fans.
Such a stud. Oh, yeah. That killed me. I said this the day beforehand just so he could get eyes on it. And he immediately was like, Matt Nagy, why?
So I will say,
I think the worst part about this is we should have had Todd Monken and he's in the top right. And then we got Matt Nagy instead, the bottom left.
Yeah, I will say on Nagy, for that chart, that is literally like a 5 or 6 game sample. So I only took when they were the primary play caller. So nothing from Nagy in Kansas City is counted in there.
Right.
And Nagy gave up play calling like 6 weeks into the year when he was head coach of the Bears in 2021. Also did it the year before. Every time Nagy's had primary play calling responsibilities, he's given them up within like 6 to 8 weeks. So yeah, smaller sample on that where he is on that chart, but I'm not really sure I should be like boosting him for it just because of like I feel like maybe he should be punished for the circumstances there, but yeah, kind of pretty rough. I'm sorry, Giants fans.
All right. Here's another chart from Ryan. It's historical backfield actual versus expected fantasy points per game. So on the right here is XFP and this is actual fantasy points per game. So you see again Todd Monken popping up really highly here. Again, Derrick Henry helps. Here's Ben Johnson at the far top right. Here's Zach Robinson up there with him. Again, Bijan Robinson really helps. But still, this is what we've got in terms of like actual and expected fantasy points per game. Anything stand out to either of you here?
Yeah, I mean, just compared to personnel, Liam Cohen being there is like very notable to me. Almost everybody else has been like because they've used like a massive bell cow or had like a super elite talent. Frank Reich is interesting. I'm like a Breece Hall centrist this year. I think there's a world where Reich just wants to run the offense through Breece and they kind of don't care if they lose a lot of games and that it's just like at the detriment that he just wants to have a bell cow and he does it with Breece. Maybe that's good and Breece can be explosive and create on his own. But yeah, like the efficiency everywhere else for Reich is pretty awful. It's just that like he's had Jonathan Taylor and he's like fed some running backs and some targets to the position for sure over his career. But yeah, I just am thinking about Breece Hall and the Jets this year is just brutal for me.
All right, I'm going to put up the red zone stats from Fantasy Points data in terms of like snap rate. I think that it's interesting to have this list for you. And I want to hit on, this would just be like eye candy on the screen for anybody watching on YouTube. And then I want to hit on one last player in terms of red zone data, and that's Cam Scataboo. We've got a lot of interesting angles here where we've talked about the Matt Nagy effect. Obviously, the return from injury is something to consider as well. But if you're wondering why Scataboo, if you're just like returning to fantasy football analysis and you're wondering why the hell Scataboo is so high in ADP, it's because the role last year, and because this player profiles so fantasy friendly in terms of what he can offer. He can offer receiving, and then more impactful, I think, is the fact that he can just offer the ability to handle this massive workload and is going to get loaded up when in the red zone. Real quick, before I give the Scataboo stats, Ryan, I want you to tell us what you found on the Nagy research. We brought this up in reference to Jackson Dart and potentially having some concerns for his fantasy profile going forward. And I think this is something that Dan will want to hear. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Dan, I think it's interesting as it relates to the QB and the running back and potential splits in the red zone here for the Giants.
Will I want to hear it?
So what I see just looking at Nagy's history that really stuck out to me is he coached Justin Fields in 2021 on the Bears, right? Fields had, I believe it was only like 7% of the team's carries inside the 5 yard line that year. Every other season of Fields' career, that's gone up to like 25-30%. That's like where we see kind of like the rushing quarterbacks that get design stuff at the goal line in that range, right? It's just that one year of Fields' career where he was extremely low in terms of rushing usage at the goal line. And also looking at when he coached Trubisky, he never went over 2 or 3 rushing touchdowns in a season. Same with Fields. So I don't know. This one's more of like a, maybe he just like really loved David Montgomery and wanted to give him the ball in the red zone over and over and over. But I could see that being a thing with Scataboo just kind of benefiting at Dart's expense around the goal line. Nothing that I've seen, and Dan, you would have a better idea than me in terms of finger on the pulse of the Giants and what they're looking to do. Nothing that I've heard coming out of the Giants has suggested like that they want Dart running less, but I do wonder like in that specific area of the field where it's so like high leverage for fantasy, if just a bit of a shift there away from Dart towards Scataboo could be really massive for Scataboo's upside, of course, and like for I guess the downside of Dart or Dart not hitting like his apex fantasy outcome.
It'll be interesting to see. I don't think like they've made no sign that they're going to take anything off his plate from a running standpoint. They just wanted to protect himself better when he's scrambling. So they've done this thing in practice where it's like if he breaks the pocket, they blow the whistle immediately and they don't kind of go on with the play to kind of train him to stay more in the pocket, which, by the way, I don't even like this idea, but it's just going to make him think too much. But regardless, in the red zone, I don't think there's any possible way to match what Brian Daboll called, to be quite honest, or Kafka. They were super aggressive with their quarterbacks, not just Dart, like DeVito, Daniel Jones, whoever played quarterback for that team. So I don't think they're going to match that. I would think there's going to be somewhat of a pull there, which also, you know, leads me to believe Cam Ward's going to be sneaky in the red zone as a rusher. I think we're going to get a few more touchdowns.
Interesting. Yeah.
And that's a big one for me. So I would think it'll go down a little bit, which could even boost Scataboo's value even more.
All right. Here's the Scataboo numbers. From weeks 2 through 7, so he barely played in week 1, then he got hurt in week 8. Weeks 2 through 7, he averaged 6.1 expected fantasy points per game, which would have been just behind Christian McCaffrey, Javonte Williams, and Jonathan Taylor over the course of the full season when in the red zone. 6.1 expected fantasy points per game when in the red zone on a Giants offense that was not that good. 37% of the expected fantasy points in the red zone. Only CMC had a higher rate last year. And 82% snap rate when in the red zone, which again, a running back 4. So it really was, I mean, what you see here on the screen is with weeks 1 and 8 included. When he was healthy, man, he was, you know, he's the Josh Jacobs type. He's the guy who can go in there and just handle all of this work. And when the team gets in the red zone, it's going to be, I think, centered around him pretty clearly. So if he's if he's healthy, if he's good to go, if he's good to be the bell cow this year, like the upside is pretty clear for fantasy.
Love it.
Okay, I want to shift over to some individual running back profiles here. In classic Beyond the Box Score fashion, I've prepared a scrapped together Google sheet that's going to burn your eyes. Prepare yourself. Okay, here we go. Here we go. I've got some of the stats that matter the most according to Ryan's research, and it's pretty much just, you know, expected fantasy points and actual fantasy points over here on the left. So expected fantasy points from last year, the percentage of the team's expected fantasy points per game, and then fantasy points per game, and it's the rank for these running backs. And then right here is 2026 ADP for these running backs. And so the running backs who have a pink number here are the best of the best. They are, by this, you know, by this process, they are undervalued. There's obviously reasons for that. For some of these profiles, Devon Achane, we're nervous about Miami and just what this offense could look like in 2026. But some of them, like Chase Brown, maybe just clearly underrated. Yes. So anyone who has a pink profile here, that designates that their ADP is lower than all four of these metrics in terms of expected fantasy points on the over the course of the full year in 2025, the percentage of their team's expected fantasy points, XFP per game, and then fantasy points per game. So yeah, Chase Brown, Christian McCaffrey. The McCaffrey stuff is so nuts. I mean, I get why people want to take the younger running backs in Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs, and these running backs, both of them are in a different situation they were last year, where they don't have the Montgomery, they don't have the Tyler Algier in the backfield anymore. I'm not saying that it's wrong or that they're bad picks. It's just like Christian McCaffrey is so clearly a 101 profile, and we just get him not at 101. So just, yeah, if you get a pick in that 3, 4, 5, 6 range or whatever, just, you know, say your prayers. Thank God for that.
Take the $10-$15 discount in auction drafts versus the top guys.
So I wanted to just show you this all sort of by ADP for this year and leave it to y'all. If anything stands out as I move down the board here, looking at what we got last year compared to what the ADP suggests. James Cook. Oh yeah, the orange ones are players who are the opposite, where all four of these metrics in terms of predictability suggest that they're maybe a little bit overrated in terms of ADP this year. But as Dan and I well know, because he's made it very clear to me on Beyond the Box Score the past year, James Cook is the man. And dude, he really is. He's so freaking good. He's one of these running backs that consistently outproduces XFP. Do you have any thoughts on him, Ryan? Is he somebody that you're drafting much? Like, or are you just kind of taking the cheaper option and Derrick Henry?
I think Cook basically goes where he should. So I don't have like a huge stance either way on him at ADP. I guess I just say, yeah, like compared to a Henry, I think we're just drafting more of like the everything goes well type of outcome than we are for Henry. We're kind of getting like the everything goes kind of bad, like it did last year and Lamar got injured. Price for Henry right now. So that, yeah, that, like, I think it's an important comparison, but I'm not saying like if I'm at the 109 or 110 and Cook's there, then I'm not like, I will click him. I think he works there, but yeah, it's not it, that it's just like something that's, it would be in the back of my mind.
The running backs who are green had, three out of the four. They look like good values. There was only one metric where they didn't have a better number than their ADP. So that's like Kyren Williams, Javonte Williams. I think these are probably like, you know, not as high upside type of running backs like we talked about for various reasons earlier, but still they do profile as being good values. And so I thought that was interesting to call them out. Bucky Irving is another one as well. Bucky will probably, you know, he'll be split in the backfield with Kenneth Gainwell, but I don't think it'll be significantly different than last year when he was, you know, running back 13 in XFP per game, running back 18 in fantasy points per game. And if who knows how to make sense of the Zach Robinson placing on these charts with the Bijan Robinson effect and everything, but he's near the top right on most of these charts. That I think we could see a bounce back from Tampa Bay's offensive line. Yeah. Where are you at on Bucky? He's been one of the hardest players to sort out over the past few months.
I'm in on Bucky at his cost. Specifically for me, it comes down to I think we're going to see a much, much better version of the Bucs offensive line. They were so banged up last year, so injured. In addition to just Baker playing through his injuries, not looking like himself, not being able to move the offense. I think the offense makes a major jump bounce back. And I don't think it's going to matter really like how much Gainwell gets involved because of what you said. Even 2 years ago when Bucky was like that almost like, I don't want to say fantasy MVP, but in the range of players you drafted to help you win your league, it wasn't like he had the full back, you know, the full workload in that backfield.
Am I seeing correctly that Josh Jacobs is running back 18? Is that just from the recent stuff? Because like I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
In my rankings, he was like running back 9 or something.
No, it's because of the off field. We don't, you know, he's just one of those weird players to draft.
Okay. The other player I wanted to highlight here is DeAndre Swift. We talked about it a little bit already, but he stands out as one of these pink profiles where he's 24 in ADP, and I think that's mostly just because there's a lot of running back profiles that we like that have gotten pushed ahead of him, and so he falls. But if you look at last year's outline, in the first year of this Ben Johnson offense, running back 16 in total expected fantasy points, 22nd in the percentage of the team's total expected fantasy points, and that's the whole team, not just the running back position specifically. Running back 19 in expected fantasy points per game and running back 17 in actual fantasy points per game. I think that this is the like bare minimum of where he could finish is like this just outside the top 20 range. And so you might say it's like a small win profile, but there's also, you know, the clear path to more upside if one, he runs hot on touchdowns in an offense that could be top three, top five in scoring, or two, Kyle Monongai simply gets hurt.
Yep.
And that could happen. I love Monongai to death, but he is an insane person. The way that he runs is so violent. It's like if he gets hurt because he runs like he weighs 240 pounds and he does not, then DeAndre Swift could all of a sudden be in like one of the most fantasy friendly roles of any running back in the NFL.
Yeah, I would co-sign that. I think he's a more similar bet to a Bishop Tootin than maybe people will give it credit for. I think Swift is more of like a, people think of him as more like a boring, like older running back boomer type of pick. And Tootin is like the excitable, like data based fantasy analyst type of guy. But I think they're both like similar bets, just really strong offenses have different paths to having like much better roles than they're being implied for in ADP. So yeah, I like that call out on Swift as well.
I like Swift as a bet even better too, because I trust the Bears offense more than Jacksonville. I trust their offensive line and their run blocking more. I trust the fact that Swift was the 2 minute, you know, 4 minute back for the Bears all the time. He lost some red zone work, but outside of that, he was the guy they trusted and will continue to trust. And he's in his contract year. Like this is his last year with the Bears on his contract. They're going to get the most out of him in my mind. Then they're going to let him walk in free agency.
Yeah. And the same is true for Monongai for sure. That's something that Chad is pointing out is that if Swift goes down, then, you know, this massive chunk of XFP that the Bears offer
both values.
Potentially goes to him. It's just that if you look at the roles last year, and to be fair, Monongai was a rookie, so his role is a little bit watered down in terms of end, like final numbers, because early in the season he wasn't playing a huge role. But if you look at last year's numbers, it was clearly Swift who had the more fantasy-friendly role, was basically top 20 in everything. And I just feel like he's a pretty freaking good bet. He really played well last year. It wasn't just, you know, the offense boosting him, the Ben Johnson-ification boosting it. Like he really took a step forward. Whether that's him, Eric Bieniemy, Johnson, I don't know exactly how much credit belongs to him, but man, I thought he played really well last year. Was a lot more decisive than we've ever seen him.
Agreed.
Anybody else stand out to y'all at running back that you want to talk about? We haven't hit on like RJ Harvey in the Denver backfield. We haven't really hit on the Pittsburgh backfield or the Tennessee backfield. I think there's potential sources of value there. Like Tyjae Spears is somebody who always pops up as a little bit undervalued. Obviously when you watch the film, he's awesome, but also an XFP. But these are probably pretty small wins. J.K. Dobbins, anybody that you guys feel like hitting a running back before we sign out here?
I don't feel that confident on anybody in any of those backfields is what I would say.
I feel the same way. I think we need a little bit more time on all those to kind of cook, marinate, and see what's developing. Those are going to be tricky backfields for sure.
Totally fair. All right. Thanks again for being here, Ryan. This was great. And again, for anybody who didn't catch the first episode, this is a part of a four-part series where we're going to look at each position and what matters for fantasy purposes. We did quarterbacks already. We did running backs today. We've been putting out lots of great videos on the player specific side of things too, digging into some of the more interesting offenses. It feels like we can't really do it. We can't do an episode without talking about Ben Johnson and Liam Cohen on this program. They just kind of like are underneath everything here. And so if you want to like think more specifically about those situations, Dan and I have dedicated quite a bit of time to watching those offenses and thinking about how they might develop in the second year with these play callers. And man, play callers is something that Ryan is very focused on as well. So we've mentioned that with some of the stats here today, looking at different play callers and running backs and everything. But that's something that you've got coming up on Fantasy Points Data as well, Ryan. So why don't you let the people know what you've put out already this offseason and what they can be on the lookout for, what kind of content you guys are doing on the podcasting side of everything. Anything you want to plug, this is the time for that. Shout out plug God. I'm stepping in for you today.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll plug, go subscribe to us at Fantasy Points over on YouTube. We also just recently started up a separate best ball channel. Jacob Sanderson and I have been doing a bunch of best ball drafts over there, going over different like team build archetypes and strategies. That's been a really fun show. So if you're a best ball drafter, you should go check that out. Fantasy Points, DFS and best ball. That's its own channel. Go subscribe, go give that some love. But yeah, other than that, all my written stuff over at fantasypoints.com. I had the quarterback scoring predictiveness article out. There will be a running back one at some point later in the summer. Same with all the positions. Giant play callers article coming out in the next month, roughly, hopefully, we're still cooking on that one. So yeah, that's me. I'm on Twitter, X at RyanJ_Heath. And thanks so much for having me, guys. Awesome show. Really enjoyed it.
And really appreciate all the Beyond the Box Score sickos with us in the month of June. Please do us a favor, hit the like button right now if you haven't already. Leave comments. Every time you watch the show, if you could just click that like button, leave comments. It makes such a difference in helping us build this page out, especially on YouTube. Really appreciate your support. Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Spotify as well. That'll help us juice up the algorithm as well. We just want to get more eyeballs on the show as we run into the summer, because we're really, personally, I mean, look, I don't want to sound like a bragger here, but we're putting out good content. We're putting a lot of time into this content too, Jacob and I, and now Ryan helping us out, and he's been a reoccurring guest. So we really want to get a lot of people's eyeballs on this, and we think once you give us a shot, you'll enjoy it and you'll come back. That's what I've always thought. So please give us a like, leave some comments, and otherwise have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon.